Welcome to Global Heart to Heart Radio at globalhearttoheart.com. This is Mary Alice, and today I am excited to have Robertson Work return to Global Heart to Heart to share with us from his first of five books titled A Compassionate Civilization, The Urgency of Sustainable Development and Mindful Activism, Reflections and Recommendations. And it is Rob's reflections and recommendations that we will be focusing on in the quest to create a new future of a compassionate civilization in the here and now. In his book, Rob asks us purposely thought-provoking questions, as well as encouraging us to act and act with urgency for the highest good of all humanity. And that means every single one of us, locally and globally. And so today, we will explore the different landscapes of individual and collective mindsets and behaviors, and about what a new future of a compassionate civilization looks like and how we will manifest it in the here and now. Rob, thank you for coming today. Welcome for joining us once again on globalhearttoheart.com. And we are going to be picking up our discussion from where we left off. We want to start out with, what does a compassionate civilization look like? That would be on page 21. You start off by saying, we know that there is only change.
Good to be with you again, Mary Alice. Thank you. We know that there is only change. We look back at history and evolution and should be astounded by the radical transformations that have brought us to this moment, from clans of hunter-gatherers to farming settlements to cities and empires to a single planetary ecology. And we are all visionaries. Our visions are hopeful or despairing or boring. How we use our imaginations, not just our intellects, is a powerful force in creating the future. If we are indeed able to avoid dystopia, what are our best hopes and dreams for the future of life on Earth? What might a compassionate civilization look, sound, feel, taste, and smell like? When I walk around in a hope-for future, I see smiles, hear laughter, feel warmth, taste gratitude, and smell possibility. I see art everywhere, and groups of people sharing ideas and stories. I hear someone acknowledging a challenging experience a stranger is having in a way that honors that stranger. People stop to tell me that they feel happy to be alive. People are enjoying the fascinating tastes of healthy foods from different cultures. I smell really, really fresh air. I see the headline, CEOs agree tenfold is fair, marking a new policy that a company's highest salary will be no more than 10 times that of the lowest. Right now, it's about 370 times. What would it mean if it were only tenfold? Wow. Then there'd be more money for everyone. I hear people talking with each other about their observations, art practices, crafts, gardens, reflections, poetry, inventions, commitments, and spiritual practices. People feel at ease with others from very different backgrounds and lifestyles. People taste oneness and smell compassion. What about you? When you close your eyes and visualize a hope for a future, what pops up for you? What is going on in your new compassionate culture, family structure, economy, political process, health system, educational structure, and ecosystem? Enjoy the image and let the warmth of your vision flow into your life and work.
That's wonderful, because there is a point somewhere in the book where you say, how does this look in your now, in your everyday life right now? How can we express that? So first, obviously, to dream it and to vision it and then bring it into your life and work now. I love that part that you write, just in the right now. So next, you speak four faces of the future, and you use the framework from Kem Wilber's four integral systems and quadrants, interior, exterior, and individual and collective is for each quadrant. There's an individual that expresses interior and exterior, and the collective, which expresses the interior and exterior. And so then you talk about what will be the new mindsets, behaviors, cultures, and systems of the emerging civilization of compassion. Can you speak a little bit to, now people can't see that we have, it's a graph with four different windows in it. Can you speak a little bit to each quadrant, like the individual, interior and exterior, and then the collective interior and exterior, and what they comprise?
Yes, thank you. I find this framework so helpful. It's very simple, just four categories, but it's so illuminating. And I used to use it in the UN and in my teaching, and I still use it because it's just so helpful. And Ken Wilber is still alive, brilliant philosopher, thinker, writer. And so this is one of the many frameworks he's invented, the four-quadrant integral framework. And so at the individual level, in the interior, that's our mindset, our consciousness, awareness, values, attitudes. So that's sort of our mind. But the individual exterior, that includes our behaviors, interpersonal relations, group skills, relationships, and partnerships. If we're going to look to the future of what a compassionate civilization would look like, what would it look like in terms of the individual interior and the individual exterior? And then at the collective dimension, the collective interior, the interior of collective is culture, myths, stories, rituals, symbols, norms. And the exterior of the collective are systems, organizations, institutions, communities, and policies. So these quadrants can be used to analyze a situation or to help plan a situation. Here we're using it to envision a hope for a future of a compassionate civilization. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So basically we're saying as an individual, I have a particular mindset, and that would involve my beliefs, what values I grew up with that I was taught or not, and what attitudes result from that. So that's all what's going on inside of me on that individual. But on the outside, and sometimes the two don't coincide, do they? Where my mindset and my consciousness might be one thing, but my behavior can be completely different. And how we interact with people and the relationships we have and how we use those skills. So that's a person. This is me. I have a certain mindset and I behave in a certain way because of it. And that's what this individual quadrant looks like. And then on the collective, now we're talking about the whole culture. So what does everybody think? And what resulting communities and systems and organizations come from that? The cultural one, it just covers everything. I'm just going to backtrack. This is just coming to me now, how our individual mindsets have been so informed by the cultural and by the collective, and how sometimes because we aren't necessarily taught how to think about that in our school systems, we're not taught how to think about it. We just follow that collective without figuring that something's not right about it.
These aren't just four static dimensions. These all interconnect, interrelate, and cause each other, as you were saying. My individual mindsets can inform my behavior, but also the larger culture and also our social systems. My behavior affects my mindsets. My behavior affects culture. My behavior affects communities. The collective symbols affect my mindsets, my behavior, and and our policies. And our collective exterior, you know, the systems we live within, they sure affect our mindsets, our self-stories, and our behavior. So thank you for mentioning that. These four boxes aren't boxes. These are interconnected, interdynamic, mutually causal dimensions.
Some people may not understand that, how powerfully and intricately it's all interconnected. As we go on, we're going to speak to that, about how it's like not just me here.
No, you're right. It is complex, because everything is causing everything else.
And the more we understand that, I think the more we can shift our habits, our behaviors, our beliefs, our knowings, and maybe perhaps make it better once we really understand how interconnected everything is. I think that's a huge lesson just for people to get all by itself. That might be the one, one thing that might make all the dominoes fall after that. All right, and so then the next paragraph you have is individual mindsets. Would you like to read from that paragraph? And then there's some things we can speak about there for sure.
As you said, we're going to talk about the four faces of the future. So if we look into the future with our hopes and dreams for a compassionate civilization, what would individual mindsets look like? Some aspects of consciousness, awareness, values of individual people. And you would have your own ideas. These are just a few thoughts. Individuals will exhibit a common sense of mutuality and interdependence, that we're all in this together. Everything is connected. An awareness of our planet's fragile ecosystem will be widespread. People will really be aware of that. Individuals will understand whole systems and think in integral patterns and processes, such as Wilbur's quadrants and others. Intuition will be as important as rationality. Individuals will value integrity and kindness above all else. Education will have expanded people's understanding to include vast stretches of time and space. Individuals will grasp that they are each unique and unrepeatable and have special capacities to be developed and shared with others. People will think of themselves as citizens of the universe, the Milky Way galaxy, our solar system, and planet Earth.
Several things come out to me. Would you speak to mutuality and interdependence, which we spoke a little bit about already, but in this context as well?
Yes, you know, often we can be trapped in a little self-concept, like, oh, I'm a separate, independent person here. But we're all so interconnected. You know, it's beyond imagination how interconnected we are, how we affect the environment, how the environment affects us, how we affect each other, how we treat each other, how we speak. So mutuality is that this mutual connection, you know, that you affect me and I affect you, and we all affect each other, and everyone is affecting, has an effect on me. You know, what I read, what I, on social media, in the newspaper, TV, radio, people I meet, it's all impacting my own mindset. And my mindset is impacting other people's mindsets through what I say and do and write and exhibit. So is that clear, that it's that kind of inescapable interdependence, that everything is interconnected? For example, right now I'm speaking English. I didn't invent the English language. English language was given to us, to you and me, over centuries of development. You know, I didn't write the Declaration of Independence, but it is impacting me. My neighbors, you know, what my neighbors think and believe affects me here in my neighborhood. You know, how they take care of their property, their home, their family. You know, it affects me, and the way I take care of my property and home and family affects them. It's really a simple concept. Maybe those words sound big, mutuality and interdependence, but it's really just that simple web of life. What do you think?
To me, the mutuality means we're the same. It's mutual, and it's also an agreement that we are, and that we will all take care of one another one way or another. The thing, too, that stuck with me is education will have expanded people's understanding to include vast stretches of time and space. I have a note that, because you talk about that everyone is unique and unrepeatable, we are it. We have our own set. We're our own snowflake. Everybody's a snowflake. Right? And what I would like to see is that the education honors everyone's uniqueness, because currently and in the past, education is not. If you do not fit into the box of what learning and education is, you're in trouble. And you do not receive the best value from education. So to me, it was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh yes, we can have education that honors everyone's uniqueness. Education that does not put people into a box, and education that actually promotes individual thinking.
Very important. That's right. Yeah. If we're just educated to take tests or just educated to get a job, and yet we might be a genius like Einstein, you know, or a great artist, but we're just being forced to learn algebra or being forced, to get some skills to make some money in a job. And so we're not honoring the unique gifts and unique genius of each individual. So I think that my hope is that in the future, as you said, education will honor each person's uniqueness. I like the way you said it.
That is extremely important because, again, especially young children, that is the face of the future. And we have people right now who are, what did I read the other day? People, I'd say, high school and college age right now, many of them cannot do simple mathematics. Never mind, nobody writes with a pen and script, which there is a different brain connection when you're constantly tapping with one finger on something, as opposed to when you are writing something on a piece of paper. There's total different brain processes that go on. And right now, there are people that cannot do math. Simple math, that you go into the grocery store, people cannot do simple math. This is where our education is really failing our society. I don't know where we stand globally in our education right now. It's not high.
Yes, I remember one statistic that, from one group, so that the U.S. is number 36 in literacy. You know, people who can read and write, we're number 36. The wealthiest country in the history of the world, but it's not the shared wealth. You know, it's not, the wealth does not care for everyone yet, but in the future it should, hopefully it will.
Okay, so education, and then we go on to individual behaviors.
Yes, so also in the individual dimension, what about the exterior dimension of behaviors, relationships, partnerships? People will tend to act responsibly in a compassionate civilization toward each other and the natural world. Leadership will have become servant leadership, which includes facilitative, interactive, dialogical, participatory, profound, inspirational, and authentic leadership. Teamwork and collaboration will be common practice. Individuals will be genuinely interested in other people of different mindsets, lifestyles, cultures, religions, and desire to learn from them. People will gather in beautiful green public spaces for social and political discourse and to share their insights, creativity, knowledge, and questions. Almost everyone will be engaged in spiritual practices such as meditation, contemplation, prayer, yoga, visualization, journal writing, or community celebrations.
Let's speak to servant leadership and collaboration, because I think that that is very prevalent, especially right now, and in what it is that why we need servant leadership. And it's my understanding that that is how the leadership of this country began. Am I not right, that people who were going to be leaders of our country were there to serve and not to take as much as they could get?
Yes, yes. Thank you. There's a whole school of servant leadership, and I would invite readers to Google it, and there are books on it and courses. And as you say, the leader isn't the one, quote unquote, in charge telling people what to do, but the leader is there to serve, to care for the people. And so servant leadership includes facilitation. And you know how important I think facilitation is, to ask questions to groups. You know, what is your vision of the future? What are the obstacles standing in the way? What strategies would help us move forward? So facilitative leadership, asking questions. Interactive leadership, dialogical leadership, where we're in a conversation. Leadership is a conversation where we are listening carefully to each other and not just speaking or yelling at each other. Participatory leadership, where everyone participates, everyone's voice, everyone's values, everyone's concerns are part of the process. A profound leadership, you know, deep, spiritual, a leadership that is concerned about the very essence of being human, being a conscious being on this planet, and inspirational and authentic leadership. Authentic meaning that you're really true to who you are. You know, you're, as you said, you're not just playing a role. You're not just a brand. You're authentic. What you say is who you are, and what you do is who you really are. And as you said, we see in so much of what we call leadership today is leadership of control and ego and telling people what they ought to do, and only what you think as a leader is what is important. So in the future, as we dream about this, the future of leadership, these were some of the things that came to me.
As you speak of this, what comes into my mind is how Indigenous cultures work, especially Indigenous cultures of America, where it was circular. It's circular, and still there are businesses today that operate this way. It's not hierarchical. In that circle, everyone counts. You know, there's a mutuality and an equality within that circle. Yes, there needs to be someone sitting, you know, in a certain position that says, okay, well, Rob spoke, and now what does Mary Alice think? You know, and that kind of leadership, facilitating a group like that. So that's how I see the collaboration in servant leadership working to benefit the whole. And we've gotten very off track and don't have that anymore, as you mentioned. And we can cite many examples of how that's not working. Yes. And how we might get back to having it work that way. And it's something now, if you start to go to like a collective, we've never seen that in our society. You know, there's a little bit of it here and there, but we have not seen that on the whole of how our society operates, how our government operates, and how our society operates. This would be a wonderful thing to return to servant leadership as we move into a more compassionate civilization and society. Yeah, and I love where you speak about that people of different mindsets, lifestyles, cultures, religion, are open to learning from one another. It can only enrich our society.
Exactly, and it's possible. It can happen. We can really be open to the other as the teacher.
Yes. I was listening to, this may not fit in this one spot we're speaking about, but it made me think of it. And Dr. Singh, you've written a chapter in his book, Applied Spirituality and Sustainable Development Process. And there's one thing that he says in there that really, he said, humans are greedy when they do not know their true nature. Mm. And I love that because it says, it speaks to everything and why we are where we are. And incorporating the spiritual aspect to leadership, to society in general, to communities, organizations, can bring us to know our true nature. And once we know that, I think the rest falls away.
Very helpful. Yes. So again, the mindset, if our mind can become clear that we are interconnected and we're not separate beings from each other and the earth, then we can care for each other and the earth, because that's who we are.
So that's good. Individual behaviors, I think that's, you know, it's a very important piece of this.
And I apologize about sovereignty. Sovereignty is so important, you know, that we honor, of course, what comes to mind is, you know, a woman is in charge of her own body. That the sovereignty of one's own body, one's own life, one's own mind. So to acknowledge and honor the sovereignty. So it's interesting, isn't it? We're all interconnected, but we also each have a unique gift that needs to be honored and respected.
That's where we take our own power for who we are and bring that to the world. Without our sovereignty, we're just lemmings. And you know, I read about lemmings, and they don't really run off the cliff because they're following everybody else. I thought that my whole life. They're not following the leader to just commit suicide. It's actually part of their evolution in the way that they, I think they over, I have to read the article again, because the only thing that stuck in my mind was that, because my whole life, you know, you see lemmings, well, man, they run, they jump off the cliff. And you think, oh, nobody was thinking about not jumping off the cliff. They just followed along. So I've used that phrase my whole life, which was why I just laughed a little bit about it, you know, when I said we're all lemmings. But in truth, it's not. I'm going to find that article again, because it just blew my whole thing, you know. Now I have to find a new way to say that people follow others without thinking for themselves, because they are not grounded in their own sovereignty.
Well, so important, their own authenticity.
So now we can move on to collective cultures. We've left the individual and we're into the collective.
Okay, so this is the collective interior. What might a compassionate civilization look like now and in the future? Cultures will have evolved to assume sexual and gender equality and human rights as the natural order of things. Equality and justice will be held as universal values. Care for natural systems of water, air, soil, plants, and animals will be deeply ingrained in the collective psyche. New stories and myths will have been fashioned from empirical observation and analysis of the evolution of the universe, these 13.8 billion years of it, and life on the earth, these 4.5 billion years of it. There will be many powerful symbols of unity, compassion, and understanding. The historical religions will have evolved to honor each other's profound insights of reality, human nature, love, and truth. Many heroines and heroes who helped humanity realize a civilization of compassion will be celebrated widely. Happiness and well-being will be understood as the birthright of every living creature. Great celebrations of life on Earth will take place frequently.
I love that.
Celebrate.
I'll plan the party.
You are the one. Thank you.
So this is what I got when I read this, was seeing an entire paradigm shift in the collective consciousness around these awarenesses. Just in a complete paradigm shift where people come into this awareness, like this awakening. That is happening already. We are in the future around that. We are. People are very much, unfortunately, some of the awareness is coming because of what we're losing or destroying, but it's still an awareness that's rising.
Yes. Thank you. And as you said earlier, it's also part of indigenous culture. Our native brothers and sisters knew they were part of the earth. It's only in the last few hundred years, you know, that we have thought that we human beings are separate from nature. We are not. We are animals. We are not separate from nature. We must have air, water, plants, animals, soil.
And native cultures understood that we couldn't take everything. So they always would leave the healthiest flower or the healthiest tree. There was always something left that was, if you wanted to go harvest herbs, you left enough of the very best of the herbs in order to reproduce the trees, everything. And then whatever was used from the land was used in a sacred manner and also used to the fullest, no waste. And if a deer gave its life to feed the tribe, every single part of that deer was used for something, clothing, weaponry, whatever was needed. So there was no waste, and it was very honorable and sacred. And that is what our society has lost. Dr. Singh had talked about in another talk that you had invited me on, where he says that, you know, about 400 years ago, we fell in love with science. And that's when we became a very materialistic society. And then we got really greedy, and everything just has gone astray from there. And I think now that I'm even saying that, we got greedy, and maybe along with that science is when we began to lose touch with our true nature, lose touch with who we really are, because all of a sudden there's new flashy, shiny things all over the place that we can buy and consume, and it really shifted humanity as a whole in how we are living on the earth now. And you don't say that we don't want to go backwards. We're not going to ever not have phones and not have whatever, but we can still live with the awareness of where we are and what we do to the earth. How are we going to continue to live if we continue to use resources that are not renewable?
Exactly. So important. So important.
And then we go on to collective systems.
Yes, and this begins to answer some of your question or concern. So this is the collective exterior dimension. So what might these systems look like in the future? And some of them are already now, but as we dream of a compassionate civilization, renewable energy will be the law of the land, and climate change will have been mitigated and adapted. Governance institutions, policies, and systems will be highly responsive, accountable, and transparent to citizen participation and opinion by virtue of respectful face-to-face dialogue and consensus building, and through the internet and social media. Education, healthcare, housing, water, food, and income will be universal rights, as will other basic necessities of life. Economies will be designed to provide needed goods and services for the well-being of all people and nature. Money will have been reinvented as an instrument for universal well-being rather than for individual power, profit, and control. The family will have evolved to embrace different possibilities for localized commitment, care, and nurture. The justice systems would have shifted its orientation from judgment and punishment to accountability, reconciliation, and rehabilitation.
At the end here, where we spoke at the beginning, where I mentioned that you said this, how can I embody a future vision in my present life and work? And what stuck out for me, consensus building and universal rights, that's a big one. But I also get this localized commitment. I was listening to Margaret Wheatley you had sent me. I love her, and I love everything she says. And it was interesting to me that in that one talk, she says, I used to think this way, to save the world. But she's brought it down to localized community, you know, just our local communities. If we can just do that in our local communities, that localized commitment. I have Buncombe County here. There's somebody else in another part of the country. And we have everybody caring for their immediate communities. And then what happens? Eventually they all blend together and it's one big one. I see it as like under a microscope when you see in a Petri dish, you see you put a little germ in there some sort and it begins to just spread. you know, or one cell divides into two cells to four cells to 100 cells. This is what I'm seeing in my mind's eye as we talk about this localized commitment and just being where we are. And that is our world. I loved when she said that. It makes so much sense and it seems more manageable for me. And I probably, for most people, putting it into that context, a tiny little earth, is for me, because you asked some questions there, and that's what I saw of that. You know, what stood out for me, and what would I see, what my vision see, what would my vision be? And that's what it would be, is to see communities starting on that small scale and just evolving into one huge community.
Yeah, bottom up. Yeah, local to global.
And there is a lot of that going on now. And I think that it's underrated because it is happening in small communities. So the world is not seeing this worldwide change, but it's happening. Right now, it might be like a little below the radar of the entire world, but it's going to mushroom. It's going to reach that tipping point.
Yes, and as you said, it can begin with one individual. They'll change your mind. How do you want to change the world? Change yourself. Change your mind. Change your behavior. Change the culture. Help change systems at home, in your neighborhood. I enjoyed working with the Swannanoa Watershed Action Network, you know, just looking at this little watershed in the Swannanoa River, and now Buncombe County, you know, just 660 square miles, 300,000 people. You know, what we do here can care for ourselves, but also show others how to care for their locality. So I love you bringing that up.
Would you like to speak to that, Buncombe, as a compassionate county? Because you've been doing a lot of work, and we'd like to tell people about that you've been interacting with the county and bringing your book to people, because it's very possible here we are going to be having Buncombe is a compassion county.
Yes, and I have done almost nothing. What I'm doing is asking people questions, you know, meeting people and saying, you know, what's happening, what's needed, and I'm discovering all kinds of excitement. So Buncombe County is one of the counties in North Carolina, as I said, about 300,000 people, about 660 square miles. And its slogan is Land of the Sky because of the mountains. There's beautiful mountains here and rivers. And it also includes the highest point east of the Mississippi. 3 years ago, the county started in asking citizens, well, what do you hope the future will be like here in our county? And what do you hope it will look like in 2043? You know, 2043, what are your dreams and hopes for Buncombe County? Looking backward, I forgot to mention this. The first people here in Buncombe County were the Eastern Band of the Cherokee. You know, for tens of thousands of years, there were only native folk here of the Eastern Band of the Cherokee. And then the Europeans came, and then the West African slaves came, and now we have people from all over the planet here in Buncombe County. Another slogan of Buncombe County is people to match our mountains. So we have gorgeous mountains and we have wonderful people. The county began asking citizens, what are your dreams and hopes for 2043? They said their slogan was our voices, our vision. So get everybody's voice out and create a vision of 2043. So they began to do that. And so when I met, as you mentioned, I met the chairman of the Buncombe County Commission and another commissioner and a staff member in the county. And some of the things I learned were very exciting. I learned that the county is addressing issues of affordable housing in the context of short-term rentals and the housing shortage. You know, there are so many Airbnbs that people can't find place to rent. You know, just people who live here and work here, I can't afford to rent something because people are trying to make more money with their putting their houses on the market as Airbnbs. So for that, and there's also just a shortage of affordable housing. I also learned that there's a need for sewer lines in some of the western locations. There's a shortage of land for housing development due to the steep slopes because of all the mountains in the area. The need to care for our water quality, to have walkable destinations. In many places, people can't walk between communities or towns because there are no sidewalks. There's just a highway. So how do we create greenways where people can move throughout the counties? The walkable destinations is an issue that the county is addressing. And the Swannanoa Small Area Plan, here in the little part of the county where I live, the Swannanoa area, which is unincorporated, so we're part of the county. There's a new little plan called the Small Area Plan. There's also a Swannanoa River Greenway Initiative and the Swannanoa Library. We were about to lose our library, but now we're thinking maybe we just need a new location. So we're working on that. But these are some of the things that really got me excited. There is a county resolution calling for 100% renewable energy, along with conservation goals and a clean water fund. So there's already money that's been allocated to help the watersheds in the county improve the quality of water. Some of the priorities for the rest of 2024 in the county include affordable housing, preservation of nature, and higher wages in the county. Because our county has had relatively low wages, but now high cost of living. So we've got to push up the wages. We've got to have higher wages in the county, and the county government is pushing for that. There is also an Asheville-Buncombe continuum of care in place to care for the homeless. This has really touched me, that Asheville City and the Buncombe County, and I met with online with the committee that is overseeing this, a continuum of care where every homeless person is identified and tracked, meaning what do they need? Are they getting what they need? That's amazing that we have a continuum of care. So with this 20-year vision and comprehensive plan, the county conducts 5-year plans, 2-year plans, and budget retreats. And the county recognizes the need to foster partnerships of all sectors, including governments, local communities, businesses, nonprofits, academia, and media. So I want to end my brief comment. You know, because of its concern for climate change mitigation and adaptation, Asheville is known widely as Climate City. And I now have a strong sense that Buncombe is Compassion County, as you mentioned. So my dream is to help in my small way with others, help the county realize its 2043 vision, our vision, by catalyzing collaborative implementation among the public sector, community sector, voluntary sector, private sector, media, and academia as a model for the world. And we could help show other places in North Carolina, the U.S., and around the world, you know, how to do this, as you were saying with Margaret Wheatley. So as you say, I get excited thinking about this. And as I said, I've done almost nothing. I'm just learning, you know, what's going on and then see what's needed. How can we help facilitate collaborative partnerships to achieve the 2043 vision?
Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights with us today. And thank you again. I look forward to our next discussions as we move through your book. And thank you to our listeners for listening and considering the questions before us at this critical time in the evolution of humanity. I urge you to explore A Compassionate Civilization, a book for anyone who cares about what is happening in our world. The language is simple, the content is informative. Rob asks us purposely thought-provoking questions as well as asking us to act, and to act with urgency for the highest good of all humanity. I invite you and encourage you to read and share A Compassionate Civilization and to learn more about Robertson Work and his global activism on robertsonwork.com. This interview will be aired on Global Heart to Heart Radio and can be heard at any time on globalhearttoheart.com in the podcast section. If you haven't already listened to my initial interview with Rob, you can sign on to globalhearttoheart.com and check it out in the podcast section, as well as the second interview. You can also hear Rob recite a few of his poems on globalhearttoheart.com in the Poets Corner. Thank you again for listening to Robertson Works, Reflections and Recommendations for Creating a Compassionate Civilization. You will be hearing more on Global Heart to Heart Radio from Robertson Work as we continue the multilogue of how we will create a compassionate civilization now. Please do contact me at maryalice@globalhearttoheart.com with your comments and thoughts. Without you, there is no future. This is Mary Alice, with love, from my heart to yours.